Good morning and welcome to the program. Yes, someone else?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning and welcome. Morning.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me well?
Yeah, we're hearing you. Yes, go right ahead, please.
Okay, good. Good morning. First of all, I want to wish everybody there a blessed Earl Walton Barrow Day. And good morning to the panel. And good morning to you, Peter.
Okay.
Yes, sir. I want to really also agree with you in what you were saying about enhancing the different art, the different arts and different skills that we somehow have seen to blindside and not really pay more focus and attention on them as part of our education, as part of building the and nurturing our education as, on a whole here in Barbados. And also, you can also look in the area of not only the arts as in music and drama, but also the art as in painters. We have a lot of people here that are good artisans, good painters. People are good at architecture. I find that they do not focus a lot on those skills. And those people, I would like to hear you comment on this, those people seem to seek elsewhere where they can not only make it as a livelihood, but they're more acknowledged. They get degrees. You can get a degree in art. They are people that are good artists, and they don't, you hardly hear them really getting acknowledged. Once in a while, you will see them. I remember when the Daphne Hackett Theater was really up and running. You will go in there and you view art from different people, even young people that are into it. And I don't know what is your take on that before I go any further.
Mm-hmm. No. I mean, I don't know if any of the other panelists want to respond, but I'm not disagreeing with you. Is there anyone else that wants to respond, or you can continue your...
Any panelists to say anything on that?
Okay. You go ahead, sir. Finish your point, and then we can move on.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Right. As far as education is concerned, right, to educate the first caller who obviously, and this is why education is most important.
All right, and it sounds as though we lost that caller. Yeah, I think we lost that caller. Dennis, do we have another caller, or can we go back to the panel?
Good morning.
Hi, morning.
Hello. Yes.
Yes. Go right ahead, sir.
Am I on?
Yes, please.
Yes, please. Okay. Good morning to Mr. McLean, and then Peter Wickham. How are you, sir?
Good morning, sir.
I listened, and the other panelists, I want to say good morning.
Let me say
that I do believe that Mr. Barrow's vision for education at that time was that every child should have an education befitting of his education ability, not his address. And I can say this to clarify what I mean. I went to Combermere when I was nine in 1959. At that time, we had to pay $9.50 inclusive of $1.50 for games fees. And you had to pay that money by the end of the third week of every term, or not you were asked to leave. And I remember seeing many of my classmates having to leave because their parents were unable to come up with that $9.50 to pay by the third week of every term. But fortunately for me, my grandfather, he made it. So I believe Mr. Barr wanted every child to have a good education thing, notwithstanding, as the first caller said, that it was not started by him, but quality education, and because all the schools that then benefited by that move had science labs, had other facilities. For instance, at Combermere, we had the Literary and Debating Society, we had the Photographic Society, we had a classroom on the top floor with every desk had on a typewriter. And that is where many of the journalists who worked then at The Advocate and later at The Nation and The Barbados, the other paper started by Mr. Cozier, went and they worked as journalists because they got the groundwork at Combermere. I'm not saying the other schools did not produce good journalists, I can only speak of what I know. So what I'm saying, reference to that first caller, I would coin a phrase, political myopia. And it seems to be just as relevant and pervasive as COVID. So we won't go into that because it's nonsense.
Oh. All right. So thanks for calling. I appreciate your contribution to the program. Yeah, we need to avoid what you call political myopia. Definitely. Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Yes, ma'am.
Hello?
Good morning and welcome. Yes, good morning and welcome, ma'am. You're
hello, good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, we're here. We are hearing you, ma'am. Yes.
A gentleman, not ma'am. Good morning.
We are hearing you, ma'am. Please go right ahead.
It's not a ma'am, it's a gentleman.
A gentleman, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My apologies, sir.
All right, go ahead, please. No one, let me say what I got to say. No one can take away the scholarship and the thing of Mr. Walter and Barrett. I support them with my family's friend too, and I support. But let me tell you something. I want to say there's a lot of stupid things saying in this world. And I can tell you why. Education is not the only asset. The first asset in life is a man's health, people's health care. Don't know if education is after that. People's health come paramount and first.
Mm-hmm.
You all know okay. Education? Education is good, but people have come first. People cannot be educated or can't thrive in education. Let me go back to what this guy is about. My office is not serious.
All right. Okay, sir. All right, we're going to run. We have quite a few people who are trying to get into the program, so let's see if we can take a raft of callers, because remember, we're going to be breaking shortly for the regional roundup. Go right ahead, please. You're on the air, sir. You're on the air. Thank you for joining the program. You are in the distinguished company of George Pilgrim, Khalil Kothiwala, and Mr. Leroy McLean, Dr. Leroy McLean, my apologies. And my name is Peter Wickham. Welcome. Welcome to the program. Go right ahead, please. All right, I guess the board is so full that when people get in, they don't realize that they're on. So let's go with another caller. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Morning. Morning, ma'am.
Yes. I went to school in the days of where you were learning pounds, shillings, and pence. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And I went to Simple St. Luke's and Princess Margaret. But mm-hmm. things have evolved so much since then that you come to a point where a lot of parents cannot even help the children in the way that they learn now and in their homework and things like that. But I want to say, I have said before on this program where we need to start to understand that the way the world is going is no longer very impressive on these academic subjects. Children are so talented with their hands and now with the days of social media and stuff. I think to get rid of the stigma in these secondary schools that claim to be on top, the two colleges, as the lady said, I would like to see a fully equipped technical institute in Barbados in terms of the giftings that children have. They may not have it academically to speak the Queen's English, but they have their hands are so gifted. They're so gifted with their hands that some of these people, I watch some people who went to school in my time come out and our mechanics and our electricians, and work for far more money than people sitting in the office with their 10 and 12 or levels. We need an institute. And if one of the colleges could be turned into an institute to try and capture the talents of these people, especially in this social media world, I think things have shifted. We got to understand that. Things have shifted. Okay. So the education system has now to go with the flow.
Right. Ma'am, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I want to get Dr. McLean in here because I believe that we are ignoring the role of the Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic, which perhaps there's a role it needs to live up to as well. But to say that that has not been contemplated, I think is a bit unfair. You with me on this, Dr. Sure. McLean?
I am with you, Peter, because you see, the Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic resulted from what we had was the Technical Institute that was at St. Leonard's that has evolved into what is now the Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic. The Technical Institute at the time trained people to be artisans, basically, and there was very little academic input. The Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic now trains people at a level where, I don't know if we remember that when the COVID epidemic started, the Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic was able to produce face shields using 3D printing, right? So, but I want to link this to a point that you made earlier about the inequalities as a result of which could arise because of the online teaching, where you have some people having access to the resources and others not having. Now, we used to have, when I was in primary school, you had the audiovisual aids department that used to actually do broadcasts where every primary school at a particular time of the day tuned into the radio, turn mm-hmm. on the radio fusion. The program that was delivered from the audiovisual aids department for all of the schools. Mm. Now, what I'm saying is that if in the 1950s and 60s you had that technology, why is it that that same department has not evolved in keeping with the technology, so that department should have been at the point now where what we are going through now would have been no problem? Yeah. But we have not developed or allowed these departments to develop. And Peter, the problem is that we have a number of people who, as I said, it is a serious indictment of the system when you have teachers who are uncomfortable with the technology, because we have had a system, we have a system where there are people who get a university degree merely to get an increase in salary, you know? And it isn't that they want, that they do a degree to give them better skills. They say, boy, a degree will give me more increments. Mm. And so you go back in the civil service and you relax. You have a degree now, you get some more money, and that is that. So mm-hmm. if we could change that, like I said, if we could get back to the point as to what are we providing education for? You know, okay. What's the role of the education?
Don Brastak, today we're looking at our borough's vision for education, whether it is fit for purpose in the 21st century. And George, you were making a point, George Pilgrim, you were making a point before we broke for the breaking news.
Yeah, Peter, I think it's important for us to compartmentalize how the discussion is formed, because I spoke earlier about the importance of access. I think Barbadians today have access to education. There may be impediments in terms of bus fare, school uniforms, getting to school, but they have access to education. I think the biggest challenge for us is discussing or distinguishing between change and reform, okay? So reform may be seen as a way to bring about change. And the question is whether or not the change that was needed to transform what we have access to has actually begun. And the externalities of COVID has said to us, we need to change. Now, if COVID disappears, will we rush back to the classroom and say to students, unplug the tablets, let's get the chalk out, pay attention to me, I'm back.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting point. Yeah. Because it would mean that the whole pandemic has gone to waste. It means that the whole crisis has gone to waste. We haven't learned anything from it.
But what is supposed to be the outcome of the process now? Are we responding to COVID, or are we going to take a novel step and say to our children, our planners, our officials, our policymakers, that the notion of what is taking place should not be seen as a response to the crisis, but is seen as a need for reform. So let's make the change to ensure that the curriculum, that the modality delivering, and that the readiness of the student converges so that there is productivity in the process. Right now, there is a conundrum. There's a juggernaut in terms of what the outcome will be. You're predicting that they should not have exams. You have fears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't have any children, but you have fears. What about the people who have children? Our fears have been greater or exponential, because the reality is that we are seeing it, we're feeling it, we're experiencing it. We're living.
But Peter, I think George is making an important point here. And basically, what he is saying is that COVID has exposed a wound. Are we going to simply say, okay, that wound, that COVID is the wound, and the wound has been healed, and therefore we can go back and do what we used to do before? Or whether we're going to say that the system, COVID has exposed that the system is wounded, and therefore we need to address that. And I don't think that I'm seeing I'm not seeing the plans for the post-COVID. COVID will not last forever. And as he said, if you just go back to the chalk and talk and the same system, what would we have learned from the experience that we're going through now? And I think that this is a great opportunity for us to say, okay, we have seen COVID has exposed the deficiencies that we have. We have a situation of inequality in terms of access to technology, whereas we have access to education, we do not necessarily have access to the means of, we do not have access to the means by which we make the best of that education. You have the number of people who don't have Wi-Fi, they don't have the tablets, they don't have anything. And not only that, they don't have the environment, the home environment. And when I say the home environment, I don't mean the physical environment, but I'm talking about the people in that environment who see it as important that they pay attention to what is happening and that they take advantage of the educational opportunities that are provided.
Yeah, it's a brilliant point. And, you know, as I say, you never let a crisis go to waste. And I think it would be a pity if this crisis went to waste. Down to brass tacks, good morning. Good morning, you're on the air.
Hello.
Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Yes, ma'am, please go right ahead.
Yes, please. I am going to go to the common entrance. I don't like the common entrance as it is. I remember in my days, when I'm not a very young person now, but in my days I believe that we did a common entrance, and then if you did not, they call it pass in those days to go to Horses or Queens, we went to the secondary school closest to us. And that eliminated the cutoff mark that is in place at this point of time. When students are cut off all the way down to, well, I assume the lowest school, I don't know which school that is. And when you do that, I think it creates a problem, because you have a whole lot of students that the cutoff mark put them in an environment that maybe it was not, that it, you don't mix. There's no mixability in it. So I believe that, in my opinion, in every society, there are people that get things early in life, the high flyers. And I believe they should have the opportunity to fly as they need to, so that they will be encouraged. And then there are people that cannot fly at that age, and I think they also need to be given the opportunity to be taught in a way that would help them. Therefore, you have the high flyers that Barbados will be able to have those people, because in USA you have very young students in universities, and because the university, the USA allow them to go with the ability that they were at the point of time, and I think we need to do that as well. I'm not sure if it's a total abandon of the 11 plus, but I think that students should be put in the environment that is good for them, and being close to home helps a lot of situations that we have, including long travel. And I believe, I'm not sure if 2 schools, 4 schools, you can put them there for students who are of a certain level, because I certainly know quite a few of those, and I remember hearing of their frustration being kept down, waiting for an age that they can take an exam. And we may not have to take the exam, but whatever method they use, I think you have to have in place the possibility for them to have their way of studying or being able to fly. And then you have the other students, I would put myself in the other student category, that will go to a school that was mixed with students that I might have been a different level than a student, another student at my school, but we all were at that school, and we were catered to, in my opinion, at that point of time. And I think that is part of the problem that we have right now in Barbados.
Yeah. Well, ma'am, I'm going to let the other panelists respond, but I just want to take the opportunity. This is a moderator's advantage to get my first response in. And I get where you're coming from, ma'am. I agree with you regarding the 11 plus in a very broad sense, but I have some challenges. And the first challenge I have is that this concept of a student being a high flyer and a student being a low flyer is something that I absolutely reject. I don't think that children fly high and low. I just think that children fly differently. And the challenge that we have is that we presume that a student who is good in English, math, and comprehension is the quintessential definition of a high flyer. And we can use our prime minister as an example. Prime Minister Motley sat her 11 plus exam, I believe it was either 9.5 or 10, but she sat it early because she was considered a high flyer because she, Miss Carrington, had taught her well, and she did well in English, math, and comprehension. The challenge I have is that if my interest is differently, if, for example, at the age of 10, I could speak Spanish and French in addition to English, does it mean that I am a low flyer, or does it mean that I fly differently? I have a learning disability. I'm dyslexic. So I am often challenged when I am presented with the kind of stuff that is presented in an 11 plus exam. Now, I'm saying that it is unfair to suggest that a student who does better than me is flying high and I'm flying low. As I said, it's just that we're flying differently. And I think the idea that all of us are good at something and none of us are good for nothing, to me, is the principle we need to be holding to with primary school children, with children at that age. Against that background, I think that an 11 plus has absolutely no relevance in the world that we're living in. I accept that in the Dipper's time, in our Barrow's time, I accept that it was a good way when you had limited educational opportunities of ensuring that everyone would get a little something. So you make sure that people compete fairly for the places at those comprehensive schools, and that the others will go other ways. But I think that at that time, it was a fair system. The reality now is that we can provide a good education for everybody. As the Prime Minister said, every school could be a good school. So if every school could be a good school, then why do we even bother with this 11 plus exam at all? Because it really has no relevance. If you look at the system in the United Kingdom, you look at the system in the United States, you look at the system in France, where I live, basically across the world, you are struggling to find a system that says that at 10 and a half or 11, we're going to punish students by saying you have to take a competitive exam. And if you do well, you're fixed for the rest of your life. If you do badly, you know, God be with you, as they would say. I don't know if any of the other panelists want to comment on what the lady has said. I think that she's on the right path. I would, however, take her in a slightly different direction. Yeah. Any of the other
Definitely, Peter. I think that the exam itself, as you pointed out, has been useful in the past, but it certainly, it functions primarily to transition persons from primary school and further on in their academic journey. So the challenge, I don't think that there are, I think that the majority of the population understands the need to move beyond the 11 plus in its current format. But I think the challenge that lies ahead of us is, how do we transition? What system are we going to use to transition children along their educational journey? And there is a debate in the educational there is a debate in the educational community that having schools of with students of mixed abilities is beneficial to those students. And there's also a perspective that streaming or sorting in some way is beneficial or is more beneficial. And I'm not an educational expert, so I can't really speak to that. But I think that those are the things, the relevant considerations that we have to begin to look at when we are looking at transitioning beyond. Additionally, the reality is that there are very few children at the age of 10 or 11 that know what it is that they want to do in life. Indeed, by the time that children get to 16 or 18, many of them still don't know what it is that they want to do. So that not so much looking at assigning persons to places where they would like to go, in as much as assigning persons to places that meet their aptitudes. Understanding that there are individuals who are more academically inclined, perhaps, and who would function better in an environment that emphasizes those kinds of things, as opposed to an individual who is more technologically inclined or who is more vocationally inclined. And creating those, the trouble is that creating those distinctions in the minds of people tends to connote inferior or superior or high or low flying. But the challenge, again, I pointed it out earlier, is not one that can be conquered by a government or by an organization or a person. It is a societal view that places particular emphasis on the academic. And I don't know how we are going to move beyond that. And the other thing that I would wish to say with respect to the online education, not only did Errol Barrow envision the need for children to be able to access education through abolishing the fees for it, he also understood that children just don't go to school, as I pointed out earlier and as has been subsequently pointed out, so that he provided the free school meals. You have the textbook loan scheme, all of these things, so that so those people, to draw an analogy, the people who propound the free market system of economics, they suggest that the only thing that government is good for is to provide the aids to trade, to provide roads, to provide infrastructure, things like that. I use that analogy to say that government not only provided the education, but also provided the aids to the education. And the current environment where we have transitioned to this remote teaching and remote learning requires a different kind of aid, so that we have government providing, to a large extent, attempting to bridge the digital divide that exists. So they're buying children tablets or whatever, or sourcing donations. The other issues that present itself with online education, you spoke to it, Dr. McLean spoke to it, with respect to the environment, not only the physical environment, but the
intellectual environment, maybe?
Intellectual environment. I guess you could call it that.
And social.
That is a lot. That, again, is not something that a government... Social environment, yes. It's not necessarily something that a government can intervene in. So you made reference to perhaps chaps sliming outside of the house. The government can't exactly pick up those chaps and relocate them. Those are problems that exist at the community level that requires some level of community intervention, programming, I guess, on the stations with respect to the importance of children's education could be helpful. But